Hello, and welcome to Media Mavens. This is episode 50. I'm Pam, and with me, as always, is Riley.
Episode 50.
50.
Wow, that's a lot.
I know. It's a milestone episode. So today, our topic is going to be Overwatch League, and joining us to talk about that is Maddie Myers.
Hey, it's me, Maddie Myers.
Hey.
I'm joining you to talk about this important esport.
Yay.
It's important new video game esport.
Awesome. Do you want to tell people a little bit about
I guess most people listening to your show will be like, I don't know why Maddie would be the person here to talk about this. My day job is that I work for a website called Compete, which is affiliated with both Kotaku, which is a video game website, and Deadspin, which is a sports website. And a year ago, they made this section. The editors of those two sites combined forces and made an esports section, and that's Compete. And I've been working there for a year since it started and trying to figure out how to cover competitive video games, aka esports, which is really the stupidest term anybody's ever come up with for anything. And no, that's not true. There's far stupider terms, but it's like on the top 100 list somewhere. And Overwatch League is also something that has happened in the past year and has been really fun to cover. And I've covered it and my colleagues have covered it. And I'm guessing that's why I'm here, is just to talk about what we've written on our website. Hooray.
Yeah. Hooray. You also do,
have podcasts, yes.
Like
when do I get to plug my own podcast? I don't know.
Anytime.
Yeah, I have two podcasts that have nothing to do with video games at all. I have a movie review podcast called Let's Watch Two Movies, and we watch two movies and compare them. And I also have an X-Men podcast called The Mutant Ages, but those aren't, I just do those in my free time, and they both release very sporadically, so,
mm-hmm. You know. I talk about Let's Watch Two Movies a lot.
Yeah.
On this
podcast.
Yeah,
you're a listener.
Yes.
Which is very flattering. It is a show that very rarely updates and is a strange show, but the people who like it seem to really, really like it, and that's what's mm-hmm. important. So either it's your thing or you don't understand it at all. It's one of those it's one of those shows, I think.
Exactly. All right, so we'll start off just with what we've been up to in the last couple of weeks. Maddie, anything you've been watching?
Oh, I've already been talking so much, but sure, I'll just continue. Why not, you know? Why not just settle in and talk for a while? Well, I've been playing this fighting game, Dragon Ball FighterZ, or FighterZ. There's some debate as to how it should be pronounced and whether the Z should or shouldn't be emphasized. And it's just about all these Dragon Ball characters, and it's kind of similar to Marvel vs. Capcom 3 in terms of like how it plays. And I don't know if you two know, but Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite has been sort of like a controversial entrant in the series because the X-Men aren't in it, and because of like, you know, Fox Marvel deals and all of that drama was happening while they were trying to make that game. And so there aren't as many, or there aren't the right Marvel characters in it. It's like all the Marvel characters from the Marvel movies are in that game, and like people are like, what? Anyway, that's a whole drama thing in fighting games, is that game and what characters are and are not in it. And also the game itself is just not really that fun. So I think a lot of people who liked the other Marvel vs. Capcoms have kind of gravitated into this Dragon Ball fighting game because it has sort of a similar feel. Like whether or not you even care about Dragon Ball as a thing, you might still like this game because it has this sort of flashy, lots of chains of combos, lots of auto combos. It's always controversial in a video game for something to have auto combos because it's too easy and, you know, whatever. We can get into that when we talk about Overwatch League. But yeah, so that's something I've been checking out video game wise.
Riley, what have you been doing?
I haven't actually played any video games other than Overwatch, and I talk about Overwatch all the time, so I'm just not going to do that today.
What? That's exactly what we're all here to do.
Until this second half. I'll leave it all until the second half, and then I'll
bottle it up.
Yeah. I'll be waiting. I've done nothing except for sit in front of my computer or my TV and watch stuff. So I watched The Cloverfield Paradox. because everybody was super excited, and I didn't watch any of the Super Bowl, so I was like, when is this going to come out? And it finally came out after.
I didn't even realize it was coming out.
Me neither.
Like, I didn't know it was in the surprise, works at all. Right?
Wasn't that intentional? Sneaky. It was a Beyonce album, but of Cloverfield. Yes. Just sort of dropped upon the world.
But not as good as the Beyonce album.
Okay, you're right. It's sort of an unfair thing to compare anything to a Beyonce album, but.
I thought they did like a lot of cool things with it, and it seemed really cool, and then I kind of just got bored and annoyed with it, so I don't know.
No.
How long is it?
I don't even remember. It was like an hour and a half?
I think like an hour 45 or so.
Wow, that's not even that long. And still long enough that you were like, I'm checked out, honestly.
I feel like it would have been better if it wasn't connected to the Cloverfield universe. Like if it was just a standalone space horror movie.
Did you see the other Cloverfield? I think it's 10 Cloverfield Lane as well. Yeah. I felt kind of similarly about that movie. I also loved it, but I still was kind of like, this is just a great movie anyway. Yeah. Like, I don't really need it to be part of anything. It can just be a cool movie. And I kind of pretended that that was how it was even when I saw it. It was just because I was like, I don't need this to be anything. Like, it's just already a fun movie, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. They're trying to be build up this whole mythology around Cloverfield and like the original Cloverfield, like I don't know if it's really deserving of all that mythology. I remember I was super excited about like all of the ARG stuff beforehand, and I remember reading all about it, being on those weird like Japanese slusho websites and trying to figure out what was going on. But now it's just like, I don't know, it was fine as a standalone movie. I really like 10 Cloverfield Lane, but I agree it didn't really need to tie into the first one at all.
Yeah.
So.
Although that movie does the right thing with that, I think, where it doesn't force you to have seen the other Cloverfield. Like, you can just enjoy it on its own terms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would say with this one, the Paradox one, you wouldn't have needed to see any of them either.
Well,
like
that's,
it works on its own
kind of good or not, I don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it so I have no idea if it's good.
I liked it. I thought it was kind of silly at times, and I find the sort of multi-dimensional thing is a very difficult topic to pull off in any case, because no one understands it and it's all theoretical and but I don't know, like horror set in space, even though it's not really horror, more like a thriller, that's sort of my particular genre weakness, so I will watch anything in that setting, even if it's bad. And it also, the star of it was, I forget her name, but she was in the Aunt Kelly in the San Junipero episode of Black Mirror, and she just, like, I like her face. Seeing her on screen makes me happy.
She has a beautiful face.
Yes.
she is deserving of being a professional actress.
Yes.
Thanks to her skills and incredibly good genes.
Yes. Last episode we talked a lot about food shows and all the like reality shows and cooking shows. So I started watching one called Zumbo's Just Desserts, which is on Netflix, and it's an Australian cooking competition show that just focuses solely on desserts.
Nice.
And it's, I love, because MasterChef Australia is like my favorite cooking show ever. So I was like, oh, another Australian one. This is good. And it's not good. Like, I'm fine with it not being good. Like, I'll still watch it. But it's not good when you really think about it. It's, I think, just starts with 12 contestants, and every episode has a certain theme of, like, desserts that they're trying to do. And the guy, Zumbo, is, he doesn't have much of a personality, and he doesn't really teach anyone anything, like, most of the time in MasterChef, like, the people come and they're challenged, but they're also sort of learning things as they go. In this, like, the feedback is not good feedback, and no one's really learning any new skills.
Oh.
And also, it seems like there's no oversight over how the show comes together. Like, it's very whimsical. The area where they cook is always like filled with rainbows, and it's always themed. Like once there's like, it was like a child's birthday party, and the next there was like a magic theme, and the music sounds like it's just ripped right out of one of the first couple Harry Potter movies.
Maybe it
could be. But then some of the shots are like just super porny, like they're, like close-up slow-mo shots of like champagne spilling or like cream being whipped in a bowl, and it's just like, what is going on? Is no one setting the tone for this show? Is there no director? I don't know, it's weird.
Sounds great. I don't know.
So, yeah, I mean, they make nice desserts and like they look really good. It's just like
it's no Great British Bake Off.
I still haven't watched that one.
No, neither have I.
Oh, if you want to be in the mood to also make some desserts, that's the show for you. That's it. That's the one.
Yeah, I need to get on that one.
I mean, it's on Netflix at this point, although I think the seasons are in the wrong order for, like, some weird reason, but it doesn't really matter.
Maddie, what else have you been up to?
Well, in terms of, like, current shows that I'm watching, I'm still watching Riverdale and How to Get Away with Murder, which is just, they're both wonderful trash shows. I don't know if either of you watch either one of those shows, but they're really silly, and that's my Friday. Like, I'm so excited. There's new ones of those every Friday. And then also I've just been over the past few months making my way through all of Star Trek: The Next Generation, which is on at least American Netflix. And I'm almost at the end now. I'm in the last season of it, and I don't know what I'm gonna do when I get to the end. Like, when I started, I'm like, this is like a million episodes. It's never gonna end. Have you two ever watched any Star Trek at all? Like any of it? Any iteration of it? Or are you not Star Trek people?
I haven't, but Pam has.
Yeah, I've watched a bunch of Next Generation and the original series.
Yeah. Yeah. So Next Generation, it's kind of weird going back because it was a show that I saw like some of as a child, but like didn't really remember as an adult at all. So like watching it as an adult, I'm like, yeah, a lot of the show is really dated, but there's things about it that I think are cool. Like, it's supposed to take place in this idealistic future where everything's amazing, but it's based on, you know, what we thought was amazing in like the 90s, so it's still like kind of off. But it is kind of cool that like Commander Riker has all of these female friends that like include people that he's previously dated, but like somehow now they're just friends and it's like normal. And I just think it's really cool. It's something that I've noticed way more as an adult watching it, to just be like, wow, that's actually really hard to do in real life. But I like the idea that this show is saying that that's possible, like for men and women to be friends, but like not only that, they're friends after having been in a serious relationship for like years. Like, they're just friends now, and that's fine and normal, and like something a straight man can apparently do in the future and not be like a huge dick about it. I don't know, I think that's cool, and it's something that I've been thinking about, especially like as I get into the final seasons where like there's lots of Riker episodes. But yeah, I don't know.
That's anyway. Cool. So we just need to figure out light speed dynamics. Travel, and then we'll figure out gender dynamics.
Yeah, I've also been watching Star Trek Discovery too, which is the new one, and it just finished up its first season, which is very weird. I feel like the Federation's politics, it just, like, the whole Starfleet's politics just doesn't really work in the present day, and I feel like Discovery is really straining against that, because it's like, well, okay, like, how do you have this sort of intergalactic utopian world without having it also just seem imperialist? Because they're going around exploring all these new planets, meeting new people, deciding when they're going to introduce themselves to aliens, make first contact or whatever, or not. There's all these ethics of that. And Discovery, like, kind of grasps at that in really interesting ways, and, like, the Klingons are the enemies in that, but a lot of times in Discovery, at least I was siding with the Klingons and being like, the Klingons have a great point. Like, Starfleet does seem kind of imperialist, and like they're trying to stamp out other people's cultures, and like they don't really know how to explore the universe without potentially doing that. And the Klingons are against that. But then at the end of season one, they have to like try to find a way to wrap that up in like a nice way. And I don't know that I think they really did it. I won't spoil it in case anybody wants to watch the season finale and hasn't yet, but I didn't feel that satisfied. And I did hear that they're going to have a season two. So I'm really curious about like what they're going to do, because the end of season one felt extremely final to me, but also at the same time, like I personally was like, this is a weird way to wrap this up. So I hope that in season two, they'll maybe have the Klingons come back and be like, hey, so we still think Starfleet's kind of messed up. And like, just so you guys know, we still think that. And like that tension will continue in some way. But it's tough because that show's a prequel to the original series.
Yeah.
So politics wise, it's like a prequel to a show that was already from a time that was not forward thinking, not as forward thinking. It was at the time, but like now, if you go back and watch the original series, you're like, all right, well, this is not like Uhura is still like essentially a glorified administrative assistant, but you know, we're like excited that she's there, you know? And so it's at the time, it was still amazing that she was there, but now we watch it and we're like, why isn't she the captain? She's the best. I don't know. Anyway, Star Trek. It's a good show, but it's also a bad show.
Like all shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Riley, what else have you been watching?
I rewatched The Mummy with Brendan Fraser.
Of all things.
I love it. I love that movie so much. Evie's eyebrows are like so thin and so little. And then her hair is just this like glorious, like big curly like mane around her, and her hair is just like the best thing about that whole movie. And then I also watched some episodes of the Queer Eye for the Straight Guy remake that they put on Netflix, and that's been really cool too. I didn't watch like any of the original, so I have no idea how it compares, but it's been really good so far, and like really emotional when these guys find out like they have a body under all the baggy clothes that they've been wearing.
Yeah, that's how the original was. I haven't seen the new one, but my mom was way into the original one back in the day. It's a total mom show. Yeah. I don't know what it's like now, but at the time it was like
a very
mom-friendly show. Yeah. To like be like, oh, straight men need help from these these gay men. I don't know. It's such a, I don't know.
They really do need help. They really do.
They do. Yeah. They extremely do. Straight men need help.
Yeah, I think I might watch that next once I'm done with my dessert show.
It's kind of sad and true that it like still is a possible concept for a show. It's like, yeah, so it's been a few decades and we've thought about it, and it turns out that straight men still need help like being comfortable with their own presentation. Like they still actually are struggling.
Yeah. Like
at the time, it was like extremely progressive. I remember that show being a huge deal at the time because it was like Will and Grace era, you know, like it was crazy to even have gay people on TV at all, let alone like not in a fictional setting, you know?
Yeah. It's funny too, because they help not only with like style and stuff, but they also help them like figure out how to cook for themselves. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, like I can't imagine what that would be like, where like not knowing how to make your own food.
I don't know if they have this, but like on the old one they would teach them how to like dance and stuff.
Some of them they do that
like all kinds of things
and like personal hygiene, like taking care of your skin. Like some of the men don't, like they're like, I never thought of using like beard oil to make my beard not like prickle my girlfriend in the face whenever I go kiss her. Like, come on.
Yeah, well, they find the guys who need the help. There are totally guys out there who know about beard oil. Like,
I mean, yeah, guys. They're, yeah.
But yeah.
So, yeah, it's been really good. And I've watched, like, maybe four episodes so far. And I think I have four left. There's only eight that are on Netflix right now. So, it's been pretty good.
Cool.
Awesome. So, I've played a few games in the last couple weeks. I played Call of Duty Black Ops 3, which is not my usual thing. My boyfriend wanted to play something co-op, so that has split-screen co-op. And it made me feel really old, because even though my TV is large, I can't see anything.
God, oh, no. Because it's super dark?
It's partially because it's super dark. It's partially because there's just a lot going on. Like, the draw distance is huge. There's weather effects. There's also people on your side running around amidst the enemies. So most of the time I'm just shooting whoever I see. Like, I don't...
just shoot anything that moves. Exactly.
You're like, it's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At one point, I got this great gun that zoomed in and, like, made people glow purple. And I was like, wow, I can actually hit things now. But then I never saw that gun again. And it's...
Like, you lost it at some point and then never found it again? It's that kind of game?
Well, it's the kind of game where you just jump around in time and place. Just every time. It's just like, I couldn't understand or follow the timeline or the story. It was just like, now we're over here and now we're over here.
I haven't played that one, but that is traditionally how a Call of Duty campaign is. It is always very disorienting. It'll be like, now you're in a mission in this country. And it's like, suddenly you're a completely different character you've never met before. And you're with a bunch of other characters. It's very... I don't know. It's a way to make a game, I guess.
I guess so.
It is a stylistic choice that those games have committed to.
Yeah. And it also did something that really upset me, which was you can't get the regular achievements, like just for beating the game and beating each mission, if you play on normal mode.
Ooh. That's messed up.
Mm-hmm. I've seen it where you can't do it on easy, not even on normal mode. Like, come on.
Yeah, like, why have that be normal mode then? Like, just have that be the mode that is whatever difficulty you think is real. Like, what?
Yeah.
Is it because they think that even being normal is now a slight... It's now a diss to even just be normal.
You better play the game on super hard.
Whatever. All right.
Yeah.
All right, so gamers.
A couple other games I played. I played Flame in the Flood, which is like a resource management survival game. You start off, it seems to take place in, like, I don't know, Mississippi or something, maybe. And everything's flooded, and you get this dog who comes and travels with you. So you basically just go down the river in this flood, and you find little islands where you can find materials and thing to craft, clothes and weapons, and you can hunt animals and things. So that was pretty cute. I think I finished that in, like, one or two sittings. I played a lot of it. And then I played a really... adorable point-and-click adventure game called Dropsy.
Yeah.
Which is
I've heard of that game.
It's about this clown who is hideous. Like, he's kind of terrifying looking.
And he's based on, like, an ancient meme, right? I'm not familiar enough with the meme to know the full story, but isn't there, like, a Dropsy the Clown meme that inspired? I think so. I don't think I'm inventing this. I'm going to Google it.
Even though he's terrifying looking, all he wants is for people to be happy and to give them hugs. And he has, like, little sidekicks. He's got a dog who either also is wearing clown makeup on his mouth or his muzzle is covered in blood. I'm pretty sure it's just clown makeup because he doesn't seem particularly aggressive. And he's got, like, a little mouse and a little bird, and each of them can sort of do different things. So, like, the mouse can go through little passages to get items and things, and the bird can fly to get items. But it was very, very endearing, and it was also done in a cool way where there was no real language. Like, when you would talk to someone, it would just be sort of like pictures floating in speech bubbles over their head, so you would just have to sort of deduce what exactly they wanted or what they were feeling.
Huh. Also, I didn't make it up.
Okay.
Oh.
the guy who made the game, I don't know enough, but it's from, like, a series of drawings that were on Something Awful back in the day, that were of this clown, this funny clown, and then, like, this guy made this game. Anyway, people can Google it, but yeah, I'm just saying I'm not crazy. That's all I'm saying.
It's real, I swear.
Yeah. It's cool that somebody, like, actually made a game out of something that was already a thing. I don't know.
Yeah, that's cool.
I don't know if he originally made the art. I don't know. Your listeners can read about it on the internet.
All right. Maddie, is there anything else you've been doing?
So since I host an X-Men podcast, I'm like always inspired to just go back and read various old X-Men comics. Most of the ones I've been reading, I don't necessarily recommend though, because I've been reading like just really random stupid ones. Like there's this old Gambit and Wolverine comic that I was like, oh, this is gonna be great. It's gonna be Gambit and Wolverine like having all the sexual tension probably, but instead it's just like. It's like a comic book about them fighting a Jack the Ripper sort of a character. And like, I don't understand the fascination with Jack the Ripper as like a sort of type of a character. Like, it's like this sort of like old serial killer real story of like a guy who murdered a bunch of sex workers and nobody ever found out who it was. And so there's always sort of time travel stories or like surrealist stories or whatever stories that envision a Jack the Ripper and have various characters fight them, like that characters in video games and sci-fi genre fiction and comic books all the time is like a Jack the Ripper stand-in. And I was so disappointed to be like reading this Gambit and Wolverine storyline and realize that it's now a murder mystery about like women dying, and like that's what motivates the characters. Of course it's such like an old school comics thing. Anyway, it was sad to me. I've also been reading like all the all new Wolverine, which is like the modern stuff where the female clone of Wolverine is Wolverine now, and she's very cool. And but those comics are not very deep. It's just like Laura Kinney punching things and being like, "I'm Wolverine," and you're like, "Yeah,
yeah, you are.
Yeah, you are Wolverine. You are." And it's like the plot is so light. It's like funny to me. Maybe I'll get far enough and she'll be battling some really heavy political shit. But like the first several issues, I've been like, nothing important is really happening. I'm just watching a lady punch some things. Anyway, it's comic books. That's what I've been reading is comic books.
All right, Riley, anything else for you?
The last thing that I've been watching, is Olympic figure skating. Yay!
I love figure skating so much.
I watched, like, the team event, and Team Canada got gold, and then...
Whoa.
Yeah. And, like...
Was that the Moulin Rouge one?
Yeah, that was part of the team event, yeah.
Okay.
They actually... Tessa and Scott skate tonight, which is Saturday. I was going to say Friday, but it's definitely Saturday right now. I watched one of the American skaters, Nathan Chen. He landed 6 quads in his routine, which is a new record. Yeah, yeah. And then he landed 5 of them.
I watched that video. As caught up on figure skating as I am.
That's the major thing that happened, so you're good. If anybody wants to talk, you can be like, man, did you hear about Nathan 10?
Yeah, that's it. That's all I got.
That routine was so good, and like I feel like in the next Olympics, he's going to be definitely on the podium for sure. And then the Japanese skater, Yuzuru Hanyu, he is the one of the only people to like defend Olympic gold medals from like one Olympics to the next. So he's got 2 Olympic gold medals back to back, and his skate was just, like, really good too. All of the top 3 skaters were so good. And then the Chinese skater, Bo Jinyoung, he danced to a Star Wars medley that had the cantina music in the middle, and he was like bopping along to it. And I was like, oh my god, you're so cute. And like, he's like 19, so he's like a tiny baby man, but he did so good. Anyway, figure skating is great, and everybody should watch it, in my opinion.
It is great.
I need to catch like a recap or something, because I haven't watched any of the Olympics this year. But I used to be super into figure skating back when it was like Oksana Baiul and Christy Elvis Yamaguchi.
It seems like a good time to get back into it. Like, I know they changed the scoring system multiple times over the years. This is all just me picking it up from my Deadspin colleagues who talk about it and actually know what they're talking about. But I do know they've changed the scoring system like again, and so now things are different in such a way that it's like more interesting to watch again for whatever reason. So it seems like it's a good time to like get back into figure skating as a thing to watch.
Yeah, it's really cool. And like the Pam for You, the CBC website has like
really good VODs. So you can go back and, like, skip, like, all the shit that you don't care about and then go, like, straight to the figure skating and, like, skip in between when they're cleaning the ice. You can skip all of the stuff and just watch whatever you want.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll check that out.
Yes.
Okay, so that's it for what we've been up to, which will bring us to our main topic for this episode, which is Overwatch League. So, if you have listened to this podcast before, you should know what Overwatch is, because we talk about it almost every episode.
A disgusting amount.
Overwatch League is just what it sounds like. It's a multi-stage, multi-month league play where at the moment they have 12 teams which compete each against each other for an eventual championship. Let's start out with do you like Overwatch League?
Yeah. I've like, so when Overwatch League started, I was like, okay, this seems like a lot of Overwatch, and I don't think I'm gonna watch all of it.
Yeah.
No, joke's on me. I've watched every single,
wow,
every single game.
Wow.
That's incredibly impressive.
I haven't played a lot of Overwatch.
Yeah, that's kind of the hook to it, right? Is like, well, you can't play Overwatch if you're also watching Overwatch.
Right. Yeah, it's really hard. I would not recommend it.
Yeah.
You hear like a rip tire coming from somewhere, and you're like, I think that's my team, and no, it's not. And then you're dead.
Yeah. Also, isn't it like super confusing? I can't even imagine playing Overwatch while watching it. Like, we're joking about it, but I genuinely, that would break me.
It was a mistake. Should not have done it.
I would have been really bad at it. I mean, I would have just not paid attention to the esport version. I would have just only paid attention to the game I was playing, I think.
Yeah,
anyway, doesn't matter.
I ended up turning the game off.
I've kind of... You know, I'm not that good at playing Overwatch, but I actually enjoy watching it, is mostly what I've learned. Like, I think it's fun to watch, especially people who are really good. Like, that's, but that's something that I kind of already learned from, like, Apex tournaments, watching those for work. Mm. And then also, I went to BlizzCon for work this year and watched Overwatch World Cup.
Sweet.
And that was so fun. It was so fun to watch that in a arena with people screaming, and it was just like, that experience was so pleasurable that I was like, you know, maybe Overwatch League could work. Like, before I went to see the World Cup in the arena like that, I was like, you know, like, watching Overwatch is all right. But that was also right before BlizzCon was when they released the spectator tools they have now, and now it's totally normalized. It's like, oh, thank God they have these spectator tools, which maybe we should explain to the listeners who have no idea what we're talking about. So, like, Overwatch is a first-person shooter team game, and they've introduced, Blizzard developed in, like, a lickety-split, because they've had to build this Overwatch League, like, with almost no time, which is its own topic, really. They put everybody to the grindstone and had them develop a bunch of tools to make the teams different colors, which in the game they're normally not wearing different color costumes, but so now in this version they do. And also their attacks, like the announcements of their attacks and like the UI systems are different colors, so you can really tell in a way that you couldn't before who's doing what. And that's super important for a game like Overwatch, because every single character has totally different visually stunning attacks that can be extremely confusing, even if you play the game watching it, just being like, I don't understand what I'm looking at right now. Who did what? When? And they've also created that bird's eye view mode, which I wish they used so constantly, because it's so helpful. So you can actually see, like, top down where each character is on the map. And so they have that, and then I'm trying to remember what else. Well, they have, like, a third-person camera that they use sometimes, which is also extremely helpful for, like, team fights and stuff like that. Anyway, so now that we have the spectator view, I think it's a lot easier to understand what's going on in Overwatch, so there's that. And that had just come out before BlizzCon, so that was part of why I was like, thank God. I still have some complaints, but in general, I've been really impressed with how much more fun it is to watch than I thought it would be. Like, ahead of time, I was like, Overwatch is going to be tough to get people on board with. And it, arguably, it might be, but I don't know. Anyway, I talked too long. Say something.
I also got into it with the World Cup, because prior to that, I had kind of been one of those people who was like, why would I want to watch someone else play video games mm-hmm. when I could play video games? So when the World Cup came around and, like, Canada was doing good, I really got into it and, like, had people over to my house to watch the finals.
It was so fun.
Yeah.
Nice.
So that's how I got into it. But I have had, like, a little bit of a different experience watching it in that I have definitely not watched all of them. I've watched maybe 10 or 12 games in this stage.
That sounds like you have a good, like, hold on what's important and what's not.
Sounds like maybe you have a life, even. Yeah.
And I do, well, that's debatable, but I do find that I'll watch a match and I'll be like, that was cool. And then even though I've been mad at Overwatch for the last couple months because I... solo queue competitive because I'm some kind of masochist. After I like watch a fun match, I'll be like, oh yeah, I'm gonna jump on Overwatch and like play some Mystery Heroes or something.
Oh god, so, yeah, it definitely makes me wish I was better at Overwatch and like feel more excited about Overwatch. And I'm like, oh right, I am not actually as good at this as the things I have just seen, but oh, no. It's always inspiring.
It's pretty cool when you do something that they did in the game and you're like, oh man, I'm so good.
Yeah.
Well, as you say that, that sort of brings one of our listener questions up, which is from Orkchop, and it is, what strategy or technique have you learned from watching Overwatch League that's helped you play better? Mm-hmm. Orkchop is working on retreating and that he doesn't always have to be on the payload.
Hmm. That's a dangerous thing. See, I usually play as Reinhardt, so like sticking with the payload is really important for Reinhardt. And for me, my hard thing that I suck at is always figuring out when to not do that. And I mean, I guess that's the same as what Orkchop learned. But it's not that I would say I don't always have to be on the payload. It's more like deciding when to move and when to be close to people. I haven't necessarily learned that from just watching Overwatch League per se, because I feel like everybody in Overwatch League is so much faster at everything than I am, that mostly what I learn is like, wow, the children are fast. But if you two are learning a lot, you should speak up.
What have I been doing? I've been using D.Va more because I used to play Zarya as a tank pretty exclusively. And so anytime that I see her on the screen, I'm like, yes, there she is. and I've, like, with her in particular, I've gotten better at, like, timing my shields properly. So instead of, like, using them to engage, I'll use them after I've already gone in and people are focusing me. And I'm like, sucks to be you because I'm at 100 energy right now. And then for D.Va, I found that I realized, like, that I wasn't playing her, like, as much of a bully as, like, she can be. So I've been, like, chasing down snipers and chasing down flankers a lot more and actually, like, getting in there and then, like, zooming back out so that my healers can heal me and just, like, you know, trying to be, like...
just put, like, the pressure cool on.
Yeah, and like take the pressure off of, like, especially Mercies now because they're like kind of stuck when they're rezzing. Mm-hmm. And then especially like using her ultimate as not necessarily as like a way to kill a bunch of people, but as a way to zone people away from a capture point or the payload, or even just to get your mech back in the middle of a fight. Like, you can just use it if you need to get your mech back. You don't have to worry about, and I've noticed that less people have called me out for not getting a bunch of kills because I'll be back in my mech and, like, pushing people away from the healers instead. So that's one of the bigger things for sure.
That's cool.
That's a good one. I also, when I played D.Va, like, sometimes I'd feel bad if I didn't kill anyone, but then you watch the pros and, like, they don't kill anyone a lot with D.Va's.
Yeah, mech, I mean, it's also, like, that's not really the most important thing. Like, it's weird.
Like, it's a zoning
because
tool.
It's not really that kind of game, too. Like, it's...
Yeah.
It's not... That's not always the goal. Like, so yeah. much as just achieving the objective of whatever map you're on. Like, yes, right. killing people is part of that, but like, it's not the only thing. It's also like yeah. spacing and figuring out your gauges and everything else.
Yeah, yeah,
for sure. Yeah. Most of the things that I've learned have been about positioning.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a DPS, like, stay near a wall so that you can hide behind it when people start shooting back at you. Or just seeing, like, where the team set up when they're on defense. Or yeah. Just sort of different passageways that they take through certain maps that I hadn't ever done before or wouldn't have thought of. That's sort of what I've learned the yeah. most, just being better about positioning. Although it's also hard since you're not necessarily working as a cohesive team.
Yeah, when, I was when just thinking play. About that too. Like, the most recent time that I played, I was like playing as Zen in Random Heroes, and I was just like, my entire team is all over the map right now. Yeah. And I was so annoyed at them because I was like running from room to room trying to help each of them and being like, guys, like, what are you don't realize like how much I'm floating around like trying to help each of you, because each of you is just individually doing your own thing. And it was like yeah. the worst. And in that moment I was thinking about like all the amazing Zen plays that I've seen in Owl, and just being like, well, those were all possible because the team actually was coordinated and wasn't just each individually yeah. going off and doing their own fucking thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's important when it comes to sort of learning things from League yeah. because a lot of the time, like, we have to accept we are not professional Overwatch players.
Well, but neither are any of the people we're playing
neither
with.
Are any of the people we're yeah. playing with. Yeah. So some things, like, I see so much Widow now, and it's like, dude, you're not Bird Ring. Please get off the Widow. Like,
yeah.
I'll get one headshot on Widowmaker, and I'm like, oh, man, I am Fleta. I am so
yeah.
good.
Yeah, so I, like, when Orkchop says not always staying on the payload, I'm like, no, I'm gonna keep doing that.
Yeah, because nobody else does yeah. it, so I can always yeah. get that achievement at the end by just being like, most time on the payload. Yeah, I was the only one on there.
Yeah, look at my 5 minutes on the payload, you assholes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever upvotes me for that. I don't know.
Yeah. It's the deal.
So, Maddie, as our esports expert, is this sort of League structure a new thing? Like, has this been done in other competitive sports?
People keep asking me this because I think they really want the answer to be yes, and I get it. It would be really nice if I could say it was. It's not the first time. I would say yeah. the first most comparable one that I know of was the Champion Gaming series, which was in like 2007, 2008, and it went out of business, and a lot of people don't talk about it anymore. But they had regional teams, and they based their entire structure off the NFL. Mostly they had Counter-Strike teams, but then they'd also have like little extra events, which were like Dead or Alive competitions and racing game competitions. They did different racing games per year according to what was popular each time. And they spent boatloads and boatloads of money. And this was 2007, so Twitch didn't exist. So there was no cultural thing for people watching games online, because it was like over 10 years ago. So like, it was a totally different era when it comes to esports. And Counter-Strike was still a huge deal back then. That was in the like days when Counter-Strike was transitioning from 1.6 to Source, and it was like this whole thing. And that was part of the problem with it, arguably. But anyway, so I wrote about that for Kotaku when I first was hired here, and about like, it ended up going out of business in part, I think, because there was just no cultural reason for people to be watching esports in enough volume at that time, you know? Mm-hmm. But now, I think it could maybe work. And I will say also, Blizzard, I think, has mimicked a lot of what Riot Games has done with League of Legends, which has been going on for, I want to say, 6 years now, their championship series. And they also have a separate one in Europe. And so they've got like a lot of structures that Blizzard has sort of been not copying, but I feel confident in saying there must be some inspiration here just in terms of like the way they're setting it up. League of Legends doesn't have the regional teams. That part isn't the same. But the regional teams has been done before, at least at the Champion Gaming series. So like, there's different things that Blizzard is kind of taking from. And I hope it works because it took Riot Games 6 years to break even on that. And League of Legends is incredibly popular in China. Like, that's, it's just an incredibly, incredibly popular esport to watch there. And so that's how they're able to get income from those viewers. And it's not very popular to watch here. They're like, the Chinese viewership just dwarfs us in size. Like, you know, we've got like a few thousand people here who really like watching League of Legends, but like, it's nothing compared to China because it's just more socially normalized for people to watch people play video games. And here we don't really have that in America. And I think a lot of the people who are investing in Overwatch League, like, are really hoping that that changes. And I don't really think we know the answer to that yet. Like, I think Twitch existing changes a lot of stuff, and YouTube having streaming platforms and stuff like that. And E-League on TBS, like, they have Counter-Strike matches on TV now. That's not something that existed even like a couple years ago. So like, that's cool. There's a lot of things happening now that weren't happening in 2007 and weren't happening in, you know, the mid 2010s when League of Legends was ramping up. But I don't know. I really don't know if OWL is, it's not the first of its kind, but it feels like the first thing that might like potentially work, if that makes sense. But that doesn't mean it's going to. There's still things about it that I'm like, you guys are investing a lot of money in something that I don't know. Because, like, it's Overwatch, too. Like, it's a game that is hard to understand. We've talked about it a little so far, but, like, it is, you're asking a lot of, like, the average person who maybe has never played it before to, like, just sit down and be like, yeah, sure, I'll watch this. Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, Counter-Strike, yeah. It's still hard to understand, but pretty much all the characters have the same abilities in Counter-Strike. Like, yeah, you can have different weapons and different armor loadouts or whatever, but you're basically all the same dude. And then you die, you stay dead. There's no magical resurrections in that game. It's just like, you know, a group of guys, that's it. And you can kind of tell what's happening pretty easily. But in Overwatch, it's like there's a billion characters. They all have totally different abilities. There's the strategy changes all the time. The game is constantly updating. Like, so even the strategies that we're used to in season one are going to no longer be applicable. All those mercy changes are going to roll in and the game will be completely different. So even the things that the person who wasn't used to watching Overwatch finally is picking up on, they're going to be watching it this next season and be seeing totally different heroes with different levels of abilities. I do not know how that's going to go, you know? Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about the patch already, like.
Yeah. Yeah. it's wild. It's really wild. I feel like they have such a challenge ahead of them. But it's cool to see them doing it. It's really cool to see it happening.
Yeah.
It's definitely fun for me and my job to just be like, well, it's cool that this is all happening. I can write about it and just think about it. But for them, maybe it's concerning. Blizzard has to like figure out how to make it work.
Yeah. One thing that I can't believe is how I didn't realize how much money like team owners were paying to buy into the league.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
$20 million.
Like $20 million, yeah.
Jeez.
And then now they're saying that for next year when more people can buy in, it's going to be like upwards to like $60 million.
They're like, yeah, we might actually raise that because we've realized we could get you to pay $20 million. Like, which, by the way, I only know this because of my Deadspin colleagues, which bless them. But apparently $20 million is like an absurd amount of money to pay for a team in traditional sports. Like, you would not pay that much for like a basketball team, like normally. Like, that's not that, apparently, I don't know. So apparently that's already high. And then what's more bizarre to me is that the team owners then also have to pay so much other money. Like, as far as I know, and I would like to try to report this out, but as far as I have learned so far, Blizzard is not subsidizing team housing or salaries. And they're mandating a minimum salary It's like $50,000 plus health insurance.
Yeah, so that I knew about.
The team owners are paying for that as well. And some of the players, like Sinatra, managed to get $150,000 a year for his salary. So
Jesus.
Some of the players negotiated.
He's not even playing yet. How did he do that?
Because he's good. I don't know. He's got a great agent.
Teach me your negotiation skills.
Yeah. So some of the players are making a lot more than $50K a year, not to mention their rent is being paid for. So they're getting that $50K on top of having rent, free health insurance. Of course, they have to play Overwatch like 16 hours a day. So it's like, well, they're not exactly, they have nothing to spend it on really yet. It's like they can't even leave the house. But no, just kidding. They're fine, I'm sure. But yeah, I mean, they're all just saving it for whatever they want to do after they age out of this.
Gosh.
But yeah, it's a lot of money for the team owners to spend is what I was trying to get at there. It's just millions of dollars being spent on this.
It's an absurd amount of money.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And Blizzard doesn't appear to be actually taking much of a financial risk at all, if you look at it that way. It's like, well, it's actually fine for them. They built the Blizzard Arena. They have to pay the staff there. That's probably pretty pricey rent. They got a place that used to be where the Tonight Show was, and they redesigned all of it, and it's a beautiful little stadium, little miniature stadium, and it's cute, it's great. So I'm sure that's pricey, but that's it. That can't be possibly worth, you know, $300 million or however much money they have now from all this other stuff.
And then what, like Twitch bought the rights to stream
it,
so they paid in money
too. Yeah, I saw that. I was like, really? Yeah. Like, also Twitch is paying Blizzard millions of dollars as well. So there is actually no downside at all for Blizzard on this one. I don't know how they got away with that, but they probably looked at how Riot was doing it and they were like, Riot took 6 years to break even, we're gonna do it in one, we're gonna turn a profit right out of the gate. We're not going to spend any of our own money on this, which Riot admittedly does by having all of their players be basically Riot contractors or employees and stuff. Like, they have everything in-house, which Blizzard's not doing that.
No.
So it's a great way to save money, I guess.
Man. Gosh, that's so much money. I
know. I know. It's actually inconceivable. Inconceivable to me to have that much money in one place.
Yeah.
That's nuts. Sorry. I know, I know. It's wild. It's esports. It's like so much money is being put into this, and that's the part of it that's fascinating to me. Is like, well, when is this bubble gonna burst? Like, at one point, are all of these traditional sports honchos who are investing all this money into esports gonna be like, no, not enough people are watching this, and I don't understand why I'm paying you $20 million to $60 million for this when I am not seeing any return on it? Like, what is the return on it? That is a good question. And I feel like they haven't probably gotten much of anything out of it yet. And so that's, eventually I think they're going to circle back and be like, hey, hey Blizzard, we gave you a lot of money at the beginning of all of this and we do not know why. So can you tell us, please? But yeah, I don't know. They're supposed to be getting dividends from sales of like jerseys and, you know, virtual merch. Like, they have all the sort of team-based merch you can buy in the game. I don't know if you two have picked those up, but
I haven't spent any actual money on it. I just have bought like the free ones that I had for like signing up and then following the newsletter.
Aren't they going to introduce that point system soon where if you watch Overwatch League, you get...
Hope so, because I have like two tokens on my account right now.
I've read some press releases about that happening. So I think you're gonna be rich.
Excellent. I can't wait to buy all the skins.
Yeah, you will be able to.
Sweet.
So that'll be something, I guess.
So there's some things I find kind of weird about the way that they've structured this league, and I don't know if you say they've just sort of copied Riot, but like
in some ways, and yes. Go on.
Just coming at it from like I know a fair amount about traditional sports structures. So like, first of all, the city teams, kind of just I feel like a lot of this thing is like they're planning like for years out, and maybe it'll make sense then. But, like, the cities don't make a lot of sense. Why does LA have two teams?
I mean, I think the answer to that is that Immortals bought Immortals bought a slot. And then the owner of the LA Rams also wanted to buy a slot. And I think Blizzard just didn't want to say no. And so they were like, well, we already have the ink dry on this contract with the Immortals, but we want more traditional sports investors. So we're just going to have two LA teams. I'm pretty sure that's how that worked. But it's really confusing and strange. It's like, why? Why is that like this?
And some of the teams don't have any tie to that city, as far as I know, like the owner or anything.
Yeah, like the London Spitfire is the best example, I think, of this. Although there are multiple wonderful examples, but that's always my mental memory because it was so ridiculous when it happened. Because they're owned by an organization that's also based in LA, because so many esports organizations are in like Vegas, LA, San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Like, that's fine. That's where everything is in technology. So it makes sense that there's a lot of, you know, rich people in those cities that want to buy an esports team. But then they're buying a team that's from South Korea, which, sure, okay, great. A lot of great players from there. But then they're buying the slot in London because that's the only slot left, because Blizzard was like, these are the cities we want. Sure, we'll take money from everybody who lives in LA, but you've got to pretend that you're from these cities for some reason.
Also, like, I'm so surprised that they didn't give, like, so they have Seoul. Like, they could have done, like, Busan.
Yeah, like, they could have had a couple other.
Yeah, well, I'm think so they surprised. Didn't.
I don't know why. I don't know why they came up with those cities at all. I have no insight into that. I should try to find out.
And then the other thing is the divisions are functionally right now, they don't mean anything.
You mean like the major leagues and minor leagues of it?
No, oh, like I mean like
Atlantic
the
versus
Atlantic Pacific.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because usually you use divisions or leagues or whatever to sort of create rivalries, because you would play teams in your own division more
and
than
from what
teams
I understand,
outside of
those, that the Atlantic versus Pacific thing is going to matter in future years, assuming that Overwatch League continues to be solvent for enough years that it would even matter. But each individual team, sorry if you already know this, but the listener may not, so I'll explain it anyway. Each individual team is building their own arena in their city. Whatever city they bought a slot in, they have to build an arena there. And there will be home and away games in those arenas. And they're already planning the building, the construction on those. At least some of the teams are. Some of the other teams are like, we're just trying to go day by day here. We have no idea what we're doing. But some of the other teams are a little more put together. Like, I know the Boston team, they're working with Robert Kraft, who owns the Patriots. And so they already have this question of, like, should we have a stadium over in Foxborough, which is actually where the Patriots stadium is, which I know because I live in Boston. And Foxborough is kind of in the middle of nowhere. It's not really anywhere near Boston. But having, or should we, like, be like the Red Sox and be in Fenway Park, which is in the middle of the city, which is also incredibly annoying to get to, but for the opposite reason, which is, like, it's absurd.
Too much
so there's, yeah, so it's like, you're in a ridiculous location either way, and so Boston Uprising kind of has a unique problem of, like, thinking about what they want to do, which traditional sports mistake they want to make. and so, but every team has that concern, where they're, you know, now the London Spitfire players are going to have to be suddenly culturally adjusting from not only living in LA for a year, then suddenly living in London, a totally different place, for another year. And that's going to be tough for them. Plus, their owners aren't from there either. So they're going to have to be building something in London. And then meanwhile, these other players, there's going to be so much airfare spent on this, by the way.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have players from Boston flying to London to fight in London. Like, it's not, but I mean, I guess that's, you know, what football's like. You know, you've got players flying over the world or all over the country to fight each other.
What about, like, are people going to be flying to Seoul and Shanghai?
There are already people flying to LA from, like, London.
Yes.
But I mean,
like, although in the divisions that won't happen, there won't be people flying from London to LA or to Seoul. Those players will only be playing, like, Boston, New York, Florida. Like, they'll be playing people in that time zone ish or at least, like, closer to London's time zone than not, few hours. And then over in the other division, the other western half, we have everybody in California, and then we've got, I don't remember where the Texas teams fall, by the way. I don't remember which side they end up on, but somewhere. And so they decide what they get to do. But yeah, I don't know. It's wild. It's we're not there yet. And it's only going to be something that matters if we even get to the level where each team has their own individual arena. And then everybody's going to be flying around just like in football or baseball or whatever other regional team that we have.
So there's no way that they're going to be able to keep up that schedule once they start flying people everywhere.
I mean, I don't know, because baseball kind of manages it. Like, they have multiple games and stuff.
Yeah, baseball, yeah.
So they'll maybe kind of do something like that. Well, they'll have, like, sort of groups of games. But you're right that the schedule would probably have to change in some ways.
Yeah. So just a FYI, Houston is in the Atlantic Division.
Okay.
And Dallas is in the Pacific Division.
All right, fair enough. They did one for each. Good to know.
Yeah. And then in terms of this season, the divisions will matter for the playoffs because the top seed in each division will get a first round bye, but they don't matter for the stage champions.
The right, and each of the stages, it's there's so many games is also what it is. It's, like, that's wild to me. I mean, I know if you want to get really into baseball or football or whatever, that's also a huge time commitment. Like, if you actually wanted to watch every single game, it's similar, I guess. But this
but
is so many games.
Baseball.
No, it would be impossible.
Like, because
you'd have to be in
they've
two places
got
at once.
Different stadiums, so people are playing at the same time.
Right.
So,
I wonder
mean,
if they're
going
to
wanted...
start doing that with Overwatch League. Because,
oh,
like...
no, I don't want to choose.
But how else are they going to figure it out? You've got years and also a lot of money from people who may not want to spend that money after all to worry about before we get there.
Plus, like, hasn't Nanzer said, like, his ideal amount of teams is, like, 28? So, like, 28 times, like,
by the way, Nate Nanzer, Overwatch League commissioner, for the listener again has no idea what we're talking about.
I had no idea what you're talking about.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I just figured I'd explain it. Nate Nanzer says a lot of things. I don't know. I honestly, having 28 teams sounds wild to me. I already feel like there's too many teams. Like, 12 is a lot of teams to keep track of, I feel like. I don't know.
I think it's hard for me to imagine
people who aren't familiar with this getting on board for something that has even more than 12 teams. You know, like, it's like, let's keep it 12 for, like, a bit. Let's just get everybody used to this and then maybe add some other ones. But I don't know. It seems like that's kind of what they're going to do. It's wild to me to imagine more people paying $20 million to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Right now, scheduling is sort of my biggest roadblock for
they're already changing it for the next for have you seen this they're already changing the schedule a little bit. It's going to be at 7 p.m every weeknight, and then they've changed the Saturday and Sunday schedule, at least for now. I don't know what they're going to do in the future, but they just recently announced that they were going to try to change it slightly.
I guess my ideal situation would be first to have a team to cheer for, which I don't really have a team at the moment, and then just watch their games as opposed to, like, sit down and watch Overwatch for 6 hours.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of been trying to tune in for, like, the Boston ones. A lot of my New York based colleagues just are watching the New York ones, so I mean, sure, there's always that, but I don't really root for any one team, so there's that. Because I'm more just, like, rooting for the idea of it, because I just think it's interesting to cover. So I'm just like, keep being weird, Overwatch League. Keep being weird and entertaining. I'm rooting for that.
All right. So let's move on to the question of, where are all the women in Overwatch?
They're in the contestant division.
There's actually one woman now, so I feel like that problem is now solved, so we can just move on.
We've solved sexism.
I think
good
so.
Good job, Blizzard.
I'm pretty
you solved
sure.
it.
It's funny because, like, when you asked me to guest on the show, it was, like, weeks ago, and I couldn't do it. But back then, Gregory had not been drafted yet. It was still in the period of time when there were no women at all in Overwatch League. But she has recently been drafted, and I know she's having – there's some visa issues with – getting her here apparently, and, like, getting her approved and everything, so I don't think she's actually going to be playing for, like, a while. But the Shanghai Dragons drafted her and a bunch of other South Korean players, which is kind of unusual because they had an entirely Chinese pro team. which, as we've said, not every city has decided to do, but they did at first, and then sort of were like, oh, we gotta draft some South Korean players, and she was one of the ones that they picked. So, I mean, there's a lot that's interesting about that, namely the Shanghai Dragons is considered the worst team in the league,
yeah,
at this time. So
yeah, that's concerning. I'm afraid now is that she'll just be like a, well, that's what happens when right. you put women on the team.
Yeah, like if she's not good enough. I mean, there's going to be yeah. so much scrutiny on her that it's absurd, really. Again, it's not really a first because League of Legends has had, I think, two female pros drafted. I know there's definitely one. I see I'm not enough of a League of Legends fan to like know all my history here, so I apologize to the listener for that. But I think there have been two. And Counter-Strike hasn't really had any. So there's already like these major esports where team-based esports where this is already kind of new and hasn't really been done yet. But it's still, we've seen like from those previous situations with, I know there was one League of Legends female player who like quit after a while just because the scrutiny became so intense. And so I could see that happening again because I feel like we haven't really created a world yet where people can even imagine a woman playing and having it be normalized and like not just treat her like shit or just obsess about her every move. Like, I don't know if that's where we are now. I think it's something we get to after we try it for a while. So I'm glad a team is trying it, but mm-hmm. I am not like super excited about how it's gonna go. I'm kind of dreading it. I don't know, I have a lot of like weird feelings about it where I'm like relieved but I'm also like worried and just stressed out. I don't know. You know what I'm saying though? Like it's bittersweet yeah. situation.
Yeah, like I'm so excited to see her like play
yeah
in the league, and like I remember watching her when she primarily played Zarya, and then now she plays D.Va a lot, and so now I'm like, I can't wait to actually see her play because I watch her stream too sometimes. But then on the other hand, I'm like, if she makes any mistakes,
I know
they're gonna be like all over her.
I'm so, more just like, are they even gonna bring her out in the first place, or is she just gonna be on the team and just on the bench for weeks? I don't even know if they're gonna bring her out, you know? Like,
yeah, gosh, there's so many like little, I don't know, hitches, I guess.
I know where... I mean, that was my first thought, and I still don't even know what to hope for really with that, like,
yeah.
Or are they only going to bring her out when they're facing teams that seem easy? And then what is that going to say? And like what it's just tough. It's going to be analyzed to death. And like, believe it or not, I don't like enjoy doing that form of analysis. I feel like a lot of my detractors like think I do or something. It's like, if you write about sexism in games and you must delight in just the downfall of corporations or making mistakes, and I just can't wait to shit on them. Like, that's not at all how I feel about it. Of course, I always want it to go well, actually.
I would
love to only write positive things. But it's just, I also know what reality is, so I'm sure it's going to be really hard and weird and have strange moments where everybody's, like, trying to figure out, like, what to say or do, you know?
Ugh. Yeah. Yeah. So, Briley, you said there's a bunch of women, or I don't know, a bunch is the right word, in contenders?
I think there are a few, yeah.
And contenders is like the minor leagues?
Yes.
Kind of?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
There's also a bunch of women. Again, I don't know if a bunch is. That's the unit of measurement we're using to
more
describe
than
women
one
now.
Is a bunch.
There's a bunch of women like in the top 500 rankings, like on Overwatch yeah. competitive. Like there are yeah. women streamers and just, you know, women yeah. that we know about that are good at the game that could potentially be tapped to go pro or be in contenders. Like there's the statistical evidence is there, even though people will tell you it isn't there, it's there. But it's also just a frustrating situation where like those women are often not given the same kinds of opportunities that male players are, for any number of reasons. So society reasons, cultural reasons. So it's like, how do you even really measure if they're as good as these male players who have maybe had so many opportunities to play with a team of people who respected them for the entire time and always treated them as a potential equal, and like women just don't have that experience in esports ever. So they're already starting out with a sort of cultural handicap that is like unacknowledged to just like already be talked down to anyway. So it's like, I don't even know like how you measure that really, like those kinds of opportunities. And that's something that's really hard to explain to people, I think, you know?
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, people don't really, I don't know, understand all those things. But I just wish that they had just drafted a woman or two from the start.
I do too.
Like,
I do too.
I think that would have sent such a good message. Like, there would still be all kinds of hurdles to overcome, and like, it might not have been even more welcoming of a culture or anything. But just had there just been one or two women on teams
just from the outset.
Yeah.
It would have been great. It would have been really nice. I think it also would have saved them from ever having to see any articles. And there were so many articles of people being like, why aren't there any women drafted in this? And then for Blizzard to have to be like, well, we've got women staffers and other aspects of the league. And it's like, well, yes, but you don't have any playing pro in the actual game. Yeah.
Like, see, they're behind the scenes. They're there.
Yeah.
You can't see them, but
take
just
pictures
pretend
of them in the dark.
I mean, I think they've also like made some other changes. Like, I know they've changed the casting desk as well. Like, they hired Golden Boy and Malik to come. Malik in that case was coming back. And so they sort of have diversified the casting desk in some ways. Just to be like, hey, we realized we shouldn't have only white guys on the casting desk. We thought about that. And we've decided to change it. So it's like, it's kind of neat to see Blizzard, like, but I don't know if that's why they're doing it. I don't know if they're responding to criticism. I cannot prove that. I will state that. However, it is a lucky coincidence that they have sort of made those changes, you know?
Yeah.
But it would have been really cool if they'd just done it at the beginning, you know?
I'm surprised, like, Team France in the Overwatch World Cup had a woman player. They had Kitty on the team, and she was one of their supports.
Yeah.
And, like, why didn't she get drafted onto a team? Like,
I mean, it didn't really make sense that Giggory wasn't drafted initially either. Like, I didn't understand that at all. I already was like, how are they drafting, like, tier 2 unknowns? Like, players I've never heard of in some of these teams, and, like, they didn't think to just check out all the players who've at least competed in Apex before. Like, what? It's really wild to me, but whatever. I don't know. I can't explain it.
It's like, we know, but
well, I mean, Nathan talked to a bunch of teams about, he wrote that article, which I know people idiots were mad about. Just kidding, not idiots. Perfectly people. And then also some idiots, but some very kind, well-meaning people were mad about. And like, teams had just the weirdest excuses. Like, I don't know if y'all read it, but they would say things like, well, we just can't really figure out how to do co-ed housing. And that's bunk, because so many of the teams are just giving their players individual apartments now. Like, a ton of them are doing that and not having a house where all the kids live together, which, fine, that doesn't matter. It's just different schools of thought about how to do it, and there's proof that either way is fine. And so that's a bunk excuse. It's crap. And then they'll also just be like, well, we're not really sure like how to find women. It just seems like women aren't interested in these games, and we don't know like how to fix that. And it's like, well, you've already got women who are interested, and you can draft them and give them a chance. And you'll be like, oh, well, those women haven't competed enough yet. They haven't really proven it yet. They haven't ever been on a team before. And it's like, okay, well, but some teams are also drafting male players who've never really competed in a team before. So what, what the fuck are you trying to say? It's just that none of them, I think, wanted to be the first one. And so,
Which is really sad.
It is like, really sad. And I'll give Shanghai Dragons the credit for this, because I already kind of had a soft spot for them anyway, because anytime somebody's an underdog, you can't help
but root for them. Have a good time.
Because I was already on their side, like, anyway, just because I was like, oh, come on, Shanghai. Like, come on, guys. You got this.
You guys can win a map.
And anytime they would, like, take a map or, like, win something slightly, you'd be so fucking excited for them, because you're like, yeah. And sometimes they had some, like, not overall wins, but they would, like, take a map and stuff. But so it was, I was already rooting for them anyway. And then for them to be the ones to be like, well, if nobody else is going to do it, we're going to draft Giggory. I think that's kind of cool. And I mean, yeah, it's kind of sad that they're the worst team in the league and they're drafting her. But I think it's also like, like, what a story. I don't know. It just feels like a traditional sports movie in so many ways.
Yeah.
It's very, like, I don't know. It's got a romantic feel to it. It's like a narrative, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, now people are just going to cheer for Shanghai all the more because it's, like, part of their brand almost to be like, well, we're just going to try some stuff and we don't know what we're doing.
Throw some stuff at a wall, see what sticks.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think it's cool that they did it.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm glad. I hope more teams follow suit.
I hope so, too. I think maybe if Shanghai ends up doing really well, the other teams will feel really stupid. They didn't do it. Yeah. That's my fantasy. But I don't know if that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully. So let's talk about player behavior and punishment. It was a few weeks ago now, but we had one player that was suspended. Mm-hmm. And
well, there
have
been a couple.
Oh, have there been a couple now?
Well,
I just heard about XQC.
Well, XQC, I think, is the one people think of. But there was a player who, before the league started, had been participating in, like, it's called, well, it doesn't matter. But he was, like, selling his Overwatch abilities to people for money to level up their characters for them. It's called boosting.
Yeah, like boosting.
Yeah, yeah. And so he apologized for that. And so he got, like, fined, I think, and benched for a little bit. I don't remember the exact punishment, but there's, like, specific punishment laid out for that. So I think he was the first player who was punished. And then XQC got punished, and then Prophet got punished for flipping the bird on camera, mm-hmm. As a joke, but not at anyone. Mm. And then those are the ones I know about. I'm trying to remember if anybody else has been, but I think it's just those three.
And
at the time of this recording, anything could happen before this comes out.
XQC, was he fined by the league or by the team?
Both.
Both.
Two separate punishments. Okay. So this is usually how it works. So individual teams are often also owned by esports organizations that have their own code of conduct that's internal. A lot of these organizations are like that. The traditional sports owners owned teams like Boston Uprising and the LA Gladiators and those teams, NYXL. I don't know that they have developed those things. They might have at this point, just following the lead of other esports organizations. But, like, I know Cloud9 and, like, those, and, like, Immortals, like, they have their own internal, because they're already used to owning esports teams. So they're already like, we've got to have internal codes of conduct for every esports team we own. And then also Blizzard has one that no one knows what it is.
Yeah.
Because Nate Nanzer has still not gotten around to telling us what Blizzard's code of conduct is. But we do know what the code of conduct is for contenders.
Contenders.
They put that out. So we can sort of make some educated guesses based on what that one says. And be like, well, it's probably similar. But we don't really know what the Overwatch League one says. But they've already been acting it out. Like, they've already been enforcing things in this code of conduct that no one knows what it is by fining, like, in XQC's case, I think Blizzard fined him and then benched him for a certain number of games. And then his team also fined him and was like, we're actually going to bench him more than that. Like, they gave him a more intense fine.
They did, yeah.
Or a more intense punishment overall, I should say. Because just based on their own internal, because I know Dallas Fuel, they've talked about, like, how they're doing their, they have, like, a provision against hate speech, apparently. And I think that falls under this. And again, these individual esports teams have not released their codes of conduct either. But unlike Blizzard, they haven't said they'll do that. Blizzard has said they'll do that and just hasn't done it. So that's a little different. But yeah, they have their own internal one. I don't know what the Dallas Fuel Code of Conduct says. I only know that it has a provision against hate speech because Mike Raphael said that, like, at Overwatch League Media Day, and I heard him say it. But I don't know the extent of it because I haven't read it. But that, I assume, is what XQC messed up on. Because he said some homophobic comments.
Yeah.
But there you go. That's that guy. That's what he does.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's gotten in trouble before with teams for throwing matches and, like,
what's interesting is the player that the so Rascal from the Spitfire is actually the player that reported him and got him his account bound for account banned for throwing games, and he's going to Dallas.
Right. Mm. Interesting. That'll be fun.
I know. I'm really stressed out for him.
You know, I worry about how long XQC's going to last there, though, because...
Yeah, I'm curious, too.
It's... I don't... Unlike a lot of people, believe it or not, I don't actually want to see him get fired, because I think that if he were fired, he would just continue on the path he's already on, which is being a Twitch streamer who just... says shitty things and is very widely encouraged for it by his audience and doesn't really see any consequences for that. And that's really sad. And it's like a dark, shitty path that we see a lot of white guys go on when they're really popular streamers on YouTube or Twitch or whatever. And they just get more and more insulated by their shitty audience and just more and more positive feedback for what they're doing. And they never really get called out by other people who care about them. And I think it would be really cool if that didn't happen to XQC and if instead his peers would pull him aside and be like, hey, you are becoming a person that is shitty and we don't want that to happen to you. And like, I don't know if there's a possibility for that for him. Like, I think at this point people are so angry at him and I don't blame them. I find him odious and his Twitch clips to be unwatchably annoying, but that doesn't mean that I want to see him become like the next PewDiePie, you know? Like, I don't that's not the ending I want for any of these guys. They're all young and just silly, and they some of them make some pretty serious mistakes and have terrible politics, and because they're Twitch streaming themselves 8 hours a day or whatever, we get to hear every last thought they've ever had, even though none of them know anything about anything. We still get to hear their thoughts. But I think it's really sad, and I think it would be cool if these punishment systems sort of had provisions for that. And as far as I can tell, they I don't know what they have for that. I mean, I don't know if there's a system where like you kind of have to make XQC like actually like go do some volunteer work or something. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what that would even look like, but I don't know how I got onto this tirade. I guess I'm just saying I don't really like this idea that these punishment systems should just be completely zero tolerance and like we just get rid of them, because we live in a world now where the retirement plan for the esports stars is to just become Twitch stars. And so they don't ever really go away. They just end up in another situation where we have to endure them. And Twitch has their own code of conduct and their own way of enforcing things. And then it's like, well, okay, you get banned from one service and then what? And then what happens? You just get further radicalized. And I don't know. I don't know what the end point is of that, but it makes me really sad to think about it. So I hope that isn't what ends up happening with XQC. I hope he turns it around. He's still young, but he is kind of, you know, acting like a piece of shit right now. So I hope he figures it out, listens to his friends. But I don't think Blizzard is going to help him. His team maybe will.
I doubt it. No.
No, I hope. Yeah, that would be ideal if something could be done about that. I've heard people suggest that people on these sports teams have to deal with like PR kind of experts to like just learn how to talk in interviews.
Yeah,
and
I think that's kind of like helpful, especially for the really young ones who really don't know and have never talked to a reporter before. And
But I think that even taking that a little further is just sort of like training on how not to be a douchebag.
Yeah,
like,
sensitivity training, as it's called in the white collar world. And it's like, I don't know how effective any of that stuff really is. I think it's, I think it's generally more effective to just be in a situation where you're suddenly hanging out with a lot of diverse people who have really different perspectives from you. And that actually is what esports is. Like, you do end up in a situation where you're hanging out with a lot of people who are from totally different walks of life than you. I mean, sure, they all had the accessibility to have a nice computer that could run Overwatch. That's something they all have in common. But they're still probably from different parts of the world or whatever, different places. And like, it would just be cool if some of these players would sort of grow up. I don't know. That's what I'm hoping for them. But I don't know. It's another layer. And I do think it's crappy that Nate Nanzer hasn't gotten around to putting out the actual code of conduct. I think there's a possibility that that's because it's still being changed. I cannot prove that in any way. It's just a personal theory I have. But I don't know. I don't know why they haven't put it out. I can't figure it out. I find that very odd.
Yeah, you feel like if it's written.
Yeah, and they're acting on it, like, clearly. Yeah. So why not let us see it? Yeah. What's the reason? But I think it could just be because this is actually really hard. Like, it's actually pretty hard to figure out, like, what should we punish? What should we try to rehabilitate? I mean, these are, like, questions that humans as a society have and have not mm-hmm. answered. So I don't know the answers to them either. I don't know what rehabilitation looks like for any of these things. I don't know what the right or wrong punishments should be. I don't know. No one does. It's like ethical, philosophical questions. So yeah. I don't think there's a version of the rule book that's going to be perfect. But I think it's interesting to think about. And it's something they're going to have to keep thinking about.
Mm-hmm. So we've got a question from Brother Dom, which is, with bans and fines coming to the more egregious actions taken by players, what should the league do about some of the more subtle bigotry in various players' streams?
I mean, we've kind of answered that. I feel like the fantasy is like some form of sensitivity training, right? Or just kind of like making the players kind of socialize and talk about their lives and just be like, oh, hey, like some of these players are different than I am and I should maybe stop being unintentionally shitty to them.
Yeah.
But I don't know what that looks like, really. I would rather see something like that happening and more transparency about that happening than seeing players get fined, because I don't get the sense that these kids even really understand what money is, because they're all having their houses paid for and they play Overwatch 16 hours a day, and so they have no sense of how much money they have or what they're spending it on. I just don't I don't get the impression they have any real sense of that. So the fines seem meaningless to me. And then getting benched, that's a real punishment. So I guess I get that as a punishment, but the fines, just, I don't understand it. It's just getting docked from their pay that they already barely like see anyway. So I don't know. That's just my personal opinion. Again, I don't know the right answer to this, but
yeah,
that's my thoughts. Feel free to weigh in if you too have other ideas.
I don't know if the league itself can do stuff about like the individual player streams. Like, I don't think they probably have any interest in trying to moderate that, but like the teams, I'm sure, have like some kind of like, if they've got code of conducts, I'm sure they're like, hey, here's some shit that you can't say on your streams.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I as far as we don't know for sure, but I think Blizzard actually does have provisions in their code of conduct that are about your behavior in any public content, which, I mean, it's debatable whether that's ethical or fair, like for you to have to be considered a Blizzard employee anytime you're in public at all, or not a Blizzard employee, but like affiliated with Blizzard and like putting a good face on Blizzard, even when you're like on your Twitch channel. Like, I think that's like a fair question to just be like, really? We're going to make these 19-year-olds be, you know, never have anything. Yeah. I don't know. It's a lot to ask of them.
Yeah,
I agree. I think it just comes down to being as specific as possible, like whether it's the league code of conduct or the team things, like it has to be right there in people's contracts in like meaningful language, like not just sort of vague kind of rules and guidelines. Like, it has to be very specific so people know exactly what they can and can't do. Because a lot of policies, like if you look at Twitch or something, it's all very, very vague.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's vague because a lot of times the institutions making those policies are just trying to prepare for anything. And they're like, well, what if something bad happens that we can't predict? Let's just put in some sort of vague wording here about sportsmanlike conduct. And then if somebody does something utterly bizarre and terrible that we could have never predicted, we'll just be like, well, we're going to say that wasn't sportsmanlike conduct and kick you from the team. Like, there's usually always like a sentence at the very end of these codes of conduct that's like, and also anything else at the league's discretion.
Yeah.
The end. And it's like, well, wait, what? So basically you can fire players for literally anything at all. Like, that's pretty wild. It's not ideal, but that's how these institutions seem to be running. Nobody but me seems to have noticed. That's weird.
Okay, so going back to the game itself, I found that, although, as I've said, I haven't watched a ton of games, in like 90% of the maps I've watched, both teams have 5, if not 6, of the same characters that they're playing.
Yeah.
Is that strange? Like, League of Legends has hundreds of characters, but is there like a a core of characters that are used versus not used, or is this sort of specific to Overwatch?
I mean, it's kind of hard to... I think this is a problem that's specific to Overwatch, but it's also like sort of apples and oranges with a MOBA, because in a MOBA, there are a lot more characters that are very similar to each other, and there are so many more characters that becomes, there are more characters that are similar, you know, just because, you know, how many different ways can you have a character that has a push mechanism and a jump and things like that. So there's a lot more similarities there. But Overwatch has fewer characters in total, but also it's a different kind of game. So it's not really comparable. I usually compare it to like Counter-Strike, but this is a situation where it can't be compared to Counter-Strike at all for the reasons that I said before, which is that in Counter-Strike, everybody's more or less the same. I don't know. It's a really interesting challenge. I think it's something that is unique to Overwatch that is good and bad. It's something that makes it really interesting to watch, but it's also something that makes it really hard for other people to understand. Because like we were saying, in the next chunk of Overwatch League view-in, we're going to be seeing totally different stuff happen. Yes. So everybody was used to seeing Mercy and Zen as the supports on like every single team. I feel like I saw Mercy and Zen every time, almost every single time. Like occasionally there'd be like somebody doing something wild, but it was pretty much Mercy and Zen Yada. And then the other characters would sometimes be like, you see a lot of Divas, you see a lot of Tracers, you see a lot of Widowmakers, but like there's some changes around. Like, you know, you've got different additional characters in addition to those supports, but I'm not going to deny that those two supports were there pretty much all the time. That is about to change. I don't think the game, I don't know that it has a balance issue like overall. I think this is a problem with Overwatch or not a problem. It's the game, you know. I don't know, what do you two think about it?
I mean, Blizzard's always had an issue with balance. I mean, we played World of Warcraft for a long time, and there was always like a just separate the PvE from the PvP talents, because so I don't know. I think there's always, it's hard though, because the characters are just so different. One will always be better than another, and it's even sort of worse at this higher level, because whereas in lower levels, you know, you see Hanzos and Symmetras and Bastions, which, you know, maybe seem overpowered at a lower level, but then they don't get used at all
in a higher
level
because of the way the learning curve works with certain characters, and also just the different tactics that pros have devised that then kind of trickle back down to the rest of us plebs and we figure out how to do it. And I mean, it's kind of interesting like how those things work. It's, I think it's hard to answer, like, does the game have a balance issue? That's, like, such a broad question to me. I'm like, well, I mean, it does have individual balance issues, but it's like polishing a stone. It's like Blizzard's job to constantly be looking at every game and being like, okay, what are we going to do? And I do not envy them for that or anything else, really, that they're trying to organize. I think,
like, rather than calling it, like, a balance issue, I'd say that Blizzard is going to constantly have, like, a balance challenge, where like they're gonna have to be constantly looking at what's going on, like, and then now especially through like the pro play that is, you know, that more people are watching and more people are like employing the strategies that they've seen in the pro games,
which then affects what characters people choose.
Exactly. So like somebody was saying to me, this was like just like casual conversation, but they were saying, you know, that they finally tried like the Temple of Anubis like defense, where they had like an Orisa in front or something with the shield, and like they held the point like the whole time, and then like the next game, like one person didn't want to do that, or they didn't understand or something like that, and they're like, oh, well, trying to explain to someone who hasn't seen that strategy employed in the Overwatch League, who picks a character that maybe they just want to play, but they're playing like the wrong one for that strat, then you've got a problem with that too. So I don't know. I
I feel like this is what makes a game interesting. I mean, I've been saying that since moment one. And I know I sort of like unintentionally ended up on the Mercy beat because nobody else at work like cared about it as much as I did. But and I don't even play as Mercy. I just like became fascinated by it for whatever reason. Just the fact that people hate her and just the many changes that have been made to her. But I don't know. I just think it's really interesting. And I don't think that it's a bad thing if suddenly one character is really popular because it makes the game, the conversation about the game so interesting. I mean, it's always going to change. The game is going to end up changing in a lot of ways. So it's never going to last that long. It'll just be an interesting debate that happens during that time period and make everybody kind of think about that character in a new way. And so to me, it's like, well, yes, these balance issues are going to arise. Like, yeah, you're going to... It's like putting an octopus to bed. Like you put three legs down and then the other two are waving out at you and you're like, okay, put those to bed. But then the a couple other ones are suddenly sticking out. I mean, it's like, that's just what this game is going to be like. It's how it was designed. You're going to change Mercy and Junkrat. We've got a question from somebody who's bringing that up. So I'm already preemptively looking at it. but I'm just like, well, it's going to change the way that the other heroes are in some way that we can't possibly know. I mean, you may as well read it because I'm already answering it.
Sure. So this is from Catherine, K_ song on Twitter. With the changes to Mercy and Junkrat, which heroes do you think will appear more in stage 2? Do you think any teams will try to stick with Mercy and or Junkrat?
I mean, I think there's a possibility that Boston Uprising will, because I talked to them about it. And one player they have, Snow, said, actually really loves Mercy and just had the nicest things to say about her, which was refreshing, and said that he still thinks that she's viable in the new build. Admittedly, he's a pro player, so he's a little better at all this than we are. So I was kind of like, well, that's really interesting. So I think it's possible that they'll have some Mercy strategies, which I think would be really fun to watch. Can't speak for any other team, but they might. I think we'll probably see some Lucio again, but I don't know. They've changed the movement on that, so everybody has to kind of relearn that. But I don't know. And maybe they'll see some more Lucio and Anna instead of just Zen Mercy stuff. What do you guys think?
Sorry, Pam, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I think that New York might actually keep playing Mercy just because, and this is like a selfish thing, I hope they keep playing Mercy because I think Ark is so good.
Yeah.
So I really hope that he gets to keep playing her, and he seems to actually like genuinely enjoy playing her, which, you know, is not very common. Usually it's seen as like, oh my god, we have to have a Mercy, so I have to play her, but I don't want to. So I hope New York keep playing her. I think that there will be times where she'll be used, but probably in more situational plays, kind of like, you know, Anna is now,
or
was previously. I think we'll probably see more of Anna in general, just because it's from what the players have been saying, it sounds like they're more excited to play her again.
which is nice. I think people don't realize the extent to which that can bias players. Like, pro players are also human beings who have their own preferences. Like, they don't always just pick characters based on the meta. Like, they'll do it when they have to, but like, they also actually just genuinely enjoy playing a certain characters and are good at certain strategies. And like, people think all of this stuff is just based on math, and it's like, no, there's also human feelings involved here, and like human experiences that are like, I like playing as Anna and I'm gonna find a way to make that work on my team just because I want to do it. And then that's how these cool iterative strategies emerge, is by that human element. Like, it's not just like, well, the numbers went up on this end of the scale, so now we're all gonna do this thing. And it's, I don't know,
that's not like, for Junkrat in particular, like, I know that they nerfed like the damage radius on his mine, so like, I feel like we're still gonna see him.
I do too. I don't actually think Junkrat is gonna decrease that much.
I don't think there were any changes made to him.
Maybe sad to hear for people who are hoping he will go away. I don't think so, but we'll see, I guess.
Like, he'll still be there. I mean, like, and like, his changes weren't enough to make anybody want to swap off him, or like, in general, they weren't enough.
Yeah, they were more subtle.
So like, that won't change. But I feel like we'll see, like, instead of seeing a shift in like maybe tanks too, depending on the types of healers that come out. But I feel like because of the mercy changes, the changes will ripple down from the healing, like, and support players down into, like, what the tanks end up playing. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Mercy's just such an interesting character because there's going to be so much change and it all revolves around this one character. So I'm really excited for next week. I can't wait to see the new games and see what happens. Ah.
Yeah. I hope that, like, I don't want Mercy to be left by the wayside. No. And I don't think she will because she's, like, a strong, dedicated healer, whether or not she has a lot of reses. Like, while I personally find her res ability now excruciating to use, like, she's still a very strong healer. She's still very mobile. But I would really just love to see just generally more. Like, as you said, it was 90% just, or 99% Zenyatta and Mercy. I want to see Ana's. I want to see Moira's. Yeah,
I was about to say, we haven't talked about Moira yet, but it would be cool. I think we will see Moira players. I think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so I'd like it to just be more of a putting them on, like, an even keel, where, you know, maybe they want one more pure healer and then one more sort of offense healing combo, like Moira versus Zen and Mercy versus Lucio. I'd like to just see more changes because I do find it kind of boring when you have a map and it's D.Va, Winston, Mercy, Zen, Genji, and then maybe the sixth is different on the two teams.
Yeah, or but like I just find Widowmaker and you're like, great, the most boring thing I could watch.
Yeah, so I don't know. I hope that it's not like just Mercy all the time, but I also don't want it to be never Mercy.
No, I know. Yeah. I'm with you on that. I having the same characters all the time is not. Although it has been really cool to see Mercy in the limelight because she hasn't really been before, so it's been kind of neat to see that, even though it's also bittersweet for other reasons, but it's been neat to see people doing cool Mercy plays.
Yeah.
While we can.
All right, so Orkchop has another question, which is, which team are you most looking forward to watching to see change in Stage 2 of Overwatch League?
Shanghai Dragons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the duh answer, but it's true.
Yeah.
Man, I hope they do so good.
Me too. Yeah. For any number of reasons.
I would really like to see them do better.
I probably would have said them even if they hadn't drafted Gregory, but just because I'm like, I'm worried about them. And I'm like, I want them to be okay.
I just want them to have fun and play.
I know. I want them to be able to keep up with everybody and just feel good about themselves and not be like having a terrible time. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then also, since I watched, like, I think London's the team that I've seen the most now just because they played 3 matches in a row on that final day. I like London now.
Yeah.
So if I have a team, I guess it's them.
London's good. It's funny. Like all the teams that I like watch and like support, the things that have gotten me to do that haven't really like have been their plays in the games, but also has been like the social media posts that the teams have been putting out, which is like get to know the players or get to see like the behind the scenes and like finding more about the players. So like I want also to see more of that too. I want to know like everything about them.
I haven't watched any of that stuff.
There's so much.
There's a bunch of like Valentine's Day themed like little videos from a lot of the teams. If you want to like watch that, I think that's a fun place to start. I don't know. I think that stuff is cool. I'm glad they're doing it.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, before we wrap things up, we'll just do a couple sort of quick fire listener questions. The first one comes from a Latino lawyer, and I think this one's for you, Maddie. What's more fun, a marathon of binge watching Overwatch League or binge podcast recording about Mad Max?
This is a reference to the fact that on Let's Watch Two Movies we did a 7-hour three-part analysis of Mad Max Fury Road, which is Mary Ellen, my co-host's favorite movie, and it's so long, and like multiple people have said they love it. That was like an absurd weekend of my life that happened in, and like I don't know, it was a weird time, but I really enjoyed it. It's kind of hard for me to compare those things because podcasting is like using a different set of brain skills where you're like sitting there talking for a really long time and like thinking really hard, and watching esports is like I had at least one experience this past season where a friend of mine threw an Overwatch League watching party, which was so fun, and he cooked dinner for all of us, and just sitting around on a couch watching an esport with people was like a very unique kind of fun, but also like turn your brain off. So they're kind of like on opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of fun. I guess I'll say I can't decide. They're both really fun if you're in a different kind of mood, you know? I mean, who can say?
It depends how you feel.
Sorry for the non-answer. Yeah. But I don't want to give either one of those things up.
I'll say I found it more fun to listen to
Mad Max. Oh, that's very flattering. I'm more entertaining than watching Overwatch.
But I also agree. Like, I need to get some more, like, viewing parties.
Yeah, they're so fun. I'm just looking forward to that. Yeah. Just more experiences of watching an esport with my friends is so cool. It's such a fun thing.
All right, so these next ones are all from Orkchop, who was very excited about this episode.
Yay!
Who's your favorite team and player?
I'm going to say Snow from Boston Uprising. I love talking to him about Mercy. It was so fun. Mm. And I don't even think he's like scarcely gotten to play any actual matches, but he's such a cool player, and he has his own channel that nobody follows. He's like an obscure player that people should check out. How about you all?
I cheer for Seoul Dynasty, but my favorite player is probably Sabiolbi from New York.
A good player. He's fun to watch.
Yeah, I love watching his Tracer play.
I would say I like London, and I really like watching good Widow, so I'd say Bird Run, which just... I just decided he was my favorite player, like, literally.
He's incredibly
the final
good.
Match.
I mean,
so, yeah.
It's fun to watch.
Yeah.
Which team has the best colors?
I'm trying to remember what they all are. I know everybody hates LA Valiant's colors, so I guess not them.
The green? Yeah.
Yeah, everybody hates that green for some reason. I don't actually like the LA Gladiators because I'm, like, not a fan of their owner because he seems slimy, but I like their purple, so
yeah,
I always have mixed feelings
purple,
about that. It's a beautiful, like, purple, but yes, I'm not cheering for them, so it's weird. But I actually like that purple a lot.
I like the purple, like, especially the in-game abilities. It looks so cool. Even New York's colors look nice, but they're like red, white, and blue, so of course they look nice.
Yeah.
Like,
their logo is rough, though.
That's true. Yeah, I like Seoul. I don't know.
The
black and gold is sort of works for me. Like, when I got my free tokens, I bought a Seoul Genji skin, and I don't play Genji. Like, I hate Genji, but I was just like, wow, this looks awesome.
He looks really good on this.
Yeah. All right, so I guess that brings the episode to a close. Thank you so much, Maddie, for talking to us.
Thank you for allowing me to take over your show.
Do you want to plug anything
or
tell people where they can find you?
I'm on Twitter at Maddie Myers, and there's links on my Twitter to my writing and also my two podcasts. If you, for some reason, still want to hear me talk more after this, you can hear me talk about movies or the X-Men at those places. So yeah, just go to my Twitter and look at the bio, and there's links in there. You'll find everything.
All right. And Riley, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Clary with an underscore. It's K-A-L-E-R-I with an underscore.
You can find me on Twitter at Josyla underscore, or on YouTube, where the channel's called Cannot Be Tamed. If you've got any feedback or questions for us, you can reach out at MediaMavensCast@gmail.com or contact us on Twitter at @_MediaMavens. We also have a forum for discussion of any of our episodes at CartridgeClub.org. And if you like the show, please leave us a review. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. All right, so I don't know if I want to talk about anything else.
At all?
I think just at all.
The show is actually over. Sorry.
Thanks,
now.
Maddie.
Yay, this was fun. We just talked about things we enjoyed doing recently, and then we packed it in. No, we have to talk about some heavy shit. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on this. Some heavy
shit. Oh, yeah. Go for it.
Yeah, you can. Okay, let me stop laughing so I can introduce the next segment.
Let me get into the zone.
All right.